Hello, Vet Blast podcast listeners. We have big news. Fetch Coastal is moving from Atlantic City, New Jersey to National Harbor, Maryland in 2025. That's right. This is our last year having our Fetch Coastal conference in Atlantic City, and it's right around the corner. Join us October 14th to the 16th to kick off your week with networking opportunities, lectures from key industry leaders, and three unique hands-on labs. Don't miss out the last chance to earn CE with Fetch in Atlantic City.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. I have my friend, Dr. Joya Griffin, in the house. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Just coming off of Fetch Nashville.
How fun. I know. I can't get enough dermatology is what it is. So to the listeners, we'll be chatting about feline dermatology, by the way, because I feel like we don't talk too much about that, especially on this podcast we haven't. So you've cats to be kidding me. You ready to chat about it?
I love all the cat-tastic jokes.
No, they really are perfect. So
you're absolutely right, though. I think that cats are often, you know, like the stepchildren of everything, really, sometimes. Yeah. You know, there's not as many medications. They're challenging to treat. Sometimes their pet parents are a little bit challenging. I'm a cat lady, so I can say that.
Yes, so, absolutely.
We're a little difficult.
By the way, did you happen to see what Dr. Julia Miller, I don't know if she brought it back to the practice yet. Did she tell you what she has?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so
she's here today. I haven't seen it.
She has this huge cardboard cutout of a cat for you, the AI generated one. You know how it says fetch?
Yeah, she's hiding from me.
So she has it for
I'm
you.
Excited.
So get ready.
One of my greatest joys in life. I was in a conference in Mexico, and you know Churu, the little thing. We give them a little treat. There was a life size bigger than me cat. And I took a picture with it.
My God.
I was like, this is amazing.
Right.
Crazy.
Love
cat
it.
Lady.
Well, to our listeners, our wonderful colleague, Dr. Griffin, is an Ohio native and graduated from Cornell University College of Veterinary Medicine. Go.
Big red.
There you go. Well, while she was there, she attained many awards, including the Dermatology Service Award for her aptitude in clinical dermatology, as well as Malassezia. And after graduation, she completed an internship at VCA hospitals. And then she went on to do some work on methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. And then she returned to Cornell University in 2007 for a residency in dermatology after completing her residency training program, served 1 year as an instructor of dermatology teaching to fourth-year clinical students, and she became a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Dermatology in 2010 and joined the Animal Dermatology Group. She has a special interest in fungal and immune-mediated skin diseases, as well as our feline friends and equine dermatology. So she enjoys lecturing fellow veterinarians, mentoring residents, and teaching the veterinary students who extern with Dr. Griffin. And she also stars in the Nat Geo Wild television series, Pop Goes the Vet with Dr. Joya, which highlights the challenging and mysterious cases she encounters in veterinary dermatology. So she always strives to care for her patients, and she does a lot of great work in our profession, as well as being a Fetch speaker. And outside of work, Dr. Griffin enjoys spending time with her family and pets. She's happily married to Dr. Forrest Cummings, a veterinary internal medicine specialist, and they have three children, Caden, and a boy-girl twins, Kobe and Carter, and they have a new kitten named Donut, and our two dogs, Jury and Magic, did I say it right?
Jury and Magic.
Jury and Magic.
Jury rhymes with curry. It's a weird name.
Okay.
Long story behind that name.
But. Yeah, I don't know how you do it. Certainly keeps you busy, that's for sure, right?
Always busy.
Oh my goodness.
The twins graduated from kindergarten this morning. So I
came
to work, ran from work to their graduation, came back. So.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow, good for them. And how old are they now?
They're six.
They're six. Aw. Wow. All right. So let's talk about pruritic and purring, how feline allergy differs from the dog. And I think let's get right into it. Talking about the patterns, the feline reaction patterns. I know you talk about four different types of reaction patterns that you see. So tell us a little bit about them.
Yeah. So Dogs are fairly simple. They have allergic skin disease. They itch, they scratch, they chew it themselves, and then that leads to hair loss, secondary changes in the skin, and then eventually secondary infections in most dogs. In cats, they can present like the dog. So that's one reaction pattern, which they call self-induced alopecia or fur mowing. We used to call it that at Cornell, which is really funny. Some people think that term is controversial. I'm not sure why. I think it's kind of funny, fur
Yeah,
mowing.
why would that be
I
controversial?
don't know. But depending on where you're trained, you'll hear those two different terms. And then outside of that, cats have the eosinophilic granuloma complex, which comprises eosinophilic plaques, the linear eosinophilic granuloma, indolent ulcers. You remember those rodent ulcers that cats get? They're really nasty. They look like they're painful. And then cats can also get a reaction pattern called miliary dermatitis, where they have multifocal crusted papules. And usually you can feel those before you see them because they may be underneath hair skin, or underneath the hair on the skin. And then we also have the head and neck pruritus. These are cats that will rip their faces to shreds. So they
Yes.
often come in cones. They're bloody, you know, it's pretty terrible. They'll rub their faces until their whiskers are broken off.
And with those cats, back to your point on that, the head and neck part, because I feel like I'm a magnet for that, but I tend to rule
Yes.
out things such as like atopic dermatitis, food hypersensitivities, adverse cutaneous drug reactions,
Yep.
flea allergy, dermatitis. Am I missing anything else with that?
Even ectoparasites like Demodex gatua, which is fairly uncommon, but it's out there. Those types of ectoparasites should be ruled out as well. But you're right. I mean, the thing I think that can be confusing about cats is that they have all of these different reaction patterns. And sometimes, especially with the eosinophilic granuloma complex, sometimes those are confused for autoimmune diseases or even neoplasia. And so they're
Yeah.
often biopsied. I mean, when they come in, they look horrid. And so
Yes.
people are like, oh my God, this looks more like a tumor, or, you know, it looks very different than what a dog would present like. And I think that, you know, sometimes makes us go down a whole different tangent when it's just allergic disease likely that's causing it.
Right. Yeah, I remember I had a case too of a cat that I thought had an eosinophilic granuloma complex, and I sent it to the dermatologist because it wasn't getting any better, and it actually ended up being squamous cell carcinoma.
Yes. So yes, if you see any of my lectures in person, I show before and afters of treatment of indolent ulcers and then cases that have gone bad, where initially it was treated like an indolent ulcer and then it turned out to be squamous cell. So it can be quite devastating. So I
Yeah.
tell people it's never wrong to treat with an oral steroid for a few weeks, and then if things aren't getting better, maybe we need to biopsy. You know, don't
Right.
let those go unchecked.
Okay. So yeah, let's go back to kind of the basics of diagnostic approach to the pruritic cat. So where would we begin?
Well, you know me, I always start with cytology. I think that cats, because we don't know a lot about their barrier function of the skin, we don't know a ton about the incidence of infection in cats, but I do think it's underdiagnosed. People forget to do cytology, and it's not uncommon to just do a steroid injection and a convenia and then see you later, you know? And so
Right.
we're not actually sure what we're treating. Cats can even have malassezia dermatitis. So if you have these open lesions or widespread lesions with papules, crusts, I think it's always warranted to start with your cytology. And then really at the crust of all of this is a thorough history. Spending a little bit of time to try to figure out how the lesion started, when they started, if there's any seasonal pattern. And then, you know, what treatments the cat has been on. Are there multiple cats in the household? I mean, cats are like dachshunds, I think. Usually
Yes.
people have more than one.
Right.
So, I've had pet parents that kind of don't want to tell me the total number of cats they have.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, I have a lot, Dr. Griffin. I don't want you to know, really. So, I ask about that. I also ask, you know, if there are other cats that have skin lesions, itchiness, if there are humans that have skin lesions. I also ask about cats that are indoor only, but may go outside because my cat is indoor only, but he goes outside like once a week. Like he's always outside. Like he loves to run outside, but our intention is for him to be an indoor only cat. So if you were to ask me, I'd say he's an indoor mostly cat. And you know, and that's important because a lot of times, especially with cats, a lot of times we don't do consistent flea control.
Right.
Especially if we think the cat is indoor only or mostly. And I think my indoor mostly cat brought a tick into my home. I'm pretty
Wow.
certain. I found it in my daughter's room. It was fully engorged. Like, disgusting, but I wasn't consistent with flea control because he's mostly inside, you know,
right.
So that day that I found that everybody got flea control.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my friends, Joya, she has an indoor cat, never been outside, got diagnosed with heartworm.
Yep.
Isn't that
that's an important part? Yeah, that point, yep. Important point. I mean, you just never know. Mosquitoes do get into the home. I mean, yep. It's really, really, we all should don't do as I do as I say. Everybody yes. should be on consistent flea control. And having those conversations with my cat owners can be challenging sometimes because, you know, there's some sort of like, you know, judgment they feel is put on them if you recommend a flea control product. They're like, oh no, my house doesn't have parasites. It doesn't have fleas. We're clean. You know, like it's like that, you know, flea denial that we always yeah. talk about as dermatologists, but I just try to keep it really simple and just say, hey, I'm trying to rule out a whole bunch of things for your cat. And if we move forward without ruling out something that's fairly simple, we may have wasted a lot of time and money moving forward. And some of the treatments that I do may not be effective if your cat truly is just flea allergic, and we can solve right. that. You know, the other thing that I kind of mention is that, you know, I don't want to miss something, and I put it more on me than on them. You know, and I say, well, if I don't get you on consistent flea control, we could potentially miss a cat that's very reactive to fleas. And I also say another thing I say is, you know, I don't really think this is fleas. I don't think it's fleas. But if it is and we miss it, then we're going to have, you know, lost a lot of groundwork by moving forward with all these things when it could be simply fixed. So I try to just keep it like simple and, right. you know, put it more on me than on them. And then, you know, hopefully get them on a good flea control regimen consistently.
Yeah, that's a really good effective communication right there. There, one other thing I was thinking when you were talking too, I've had instances of dermatophytosis. What are your thoughts on that yes. too with cats?
So it depends on this, you know, kind of where you're trained with whether or not you'll do minimum databasing. And for younger veterinarians, that's basically, do I test for everything up front? And so some veterinary dermatologists, their minimum database includes, you know, cytology of all pets, full blood work, DTMs, where you fungal culture all the cats that come in. And so I have a lot of colleagues where they'll do that. I really focus in on my history, and then I prioritize my differentials to determine whether or not I think that's necessary in each case. So every itchy cat doesn't get a DTM in our practice, but it's not wrong to do, you know, because you can rule it out. And there are cats that, so with ringworm, there are some animals that can have a, you know, an immune response where they become very itchy to the ringworm. Ringworm in itself is not typically a paretic disease, but in some cats it is. So for those small percentage of cats that would have itchy skin disease as a reaction to ringworm, it's not a bad idea to rule it out. So in some of those cases, we will do that. We'll look for ringworm. You can always pull out a woods lamp as well. That may help.
Yeah. Cool.
That's a good question. That's a good point.
Yeah. And let's talk about some treatment options, or I should say maybe a lack thereof to the listeners.
Yeah. Are the drug companies listening in?
Right.
That's one thing that we always, you know, we have a reps come in and we say, if we can get more drugs for cats, that right. would be really amazing, or more ways to administer these drugs to cats, because cats can be really challenging.
Yeah, that's a great point too. It's another thing is like, what's your comfort level, mom, dad, or whoever, you know, to administer medication to the cat. So talk to me about what are some of the options that are out there.
So unfortunately, the only licensed for use in cats to treat allergic skin disease or atopy in cats is Atopica liquid. And now we have Cyclovance, but that's labeled for use in dogs. And then there is a new liquid cyclosporin, modified cyclosporin by another drug company we're going to have to add in because they're going to be mad at me for use in cats.
Okay. Gotcha.
So we'll add that in. I can't remember the name of it, but it just came out a few months ago. So there's very few options, but basically modified cyclosporin for use in cats. And, you know, that works well. Efficacy probably close to 80% if you can get it into the cat. It is a liquid. And this is something that I usually will use once I've ruled out food hypersensitivity, I've ruled out ectoparasites, and then I have a diagnosis of exclusion of allergic disease or atopic dermatitis in cats. I use that term atopic dermatitis kind of loosely because we don't know exactly if it's truly atopy. And there's a lot of controversy about that, and a lot of different acronyms for environmental allergies in cats. So, but that's a lot of it's really just academic.
Okay. Gotcha. And what are your thoughts about antihistamines? Because I know in cats, they've been shown to be a little bit more effective than in dogs, correct?
So I think it's worth a try. I have not had a great feeling that antihistamines are super effective in cats, but I think, you know, it's easy to get your hands on over-the-counter antihistamines. So I usually offer some doses to my colleagues if they want to try. My go-to just for ease of use is usually cetirizine or Zyrtec, and I'll give half a tablet once a day and try it. The biggest thing with antihistamines is that you have to cycle through several to find the best fit for that individual cat, and usually give them for 7 to 14 days to really see efficacy. It's frustrating that antihistamines don't work very well in pets, but I think of it as in, you know, the fact that atopy is different than allergic rhinitis. So in humans, our eyes start itching, we have runny nose, scratchy throat, so we take an antihistamine. So that makes sense. But dog and cat allergies are, you know, more manifested in their skin, and it's more of a multifactorial disease, and it's not the same disease, because I think pet parents get frustrated why they can't just give a Benadryl and they don't understand why it doesn't work.
Okay, and here's the most probably popular question from my fellow generalists is about glucocorticoids. So talk to me about that.
Yes, steroids are often used in cat allergies. I mean, let's be honest, there's really no way around it. Even if I have a patient that my anchoring treatment is going to be a Topica liquid, which, by the way, another brand name is Modulus. That's another liquid cyclosporin for cats. But if say that I'm going to keep them on or start them on a Topica liquid or cyclosporin, and that's going to be my mainstay of treatment. Maybe that's what I'm going to do while I'm beginning immunotherapy. I know that cyclosporin is going to take 3 to 4 weeks to really kick in. So I need something to provide relief for that cat. So a lot of times I will choose an oral steroid to provide relief for those first 3 or 4 weeks, taper them off the steroid, and then maintain them hopefully on the cyclosporin. And, you know, my goals ultimately would be to, you know, allergy test every cat that came in if I could, just because chronic medications and cats, of course, have side effects, but they're a pain to give in general. There are some wonderful cats that take meds really easily, but that's not the case for us in our household with our cats, and with a lot of my pet parents, it can be really challenging. So, but steroids are okay. The biggest thing is, I, as a dermatologist, prefer to use oral steroids if possible, because you're able to taper the medication down to the lowest effective dose, which means, you know, hopefully I can get them to alternate day therapy where they only need a steroid a couple times a week, especially if that's going to be a long-term treatment. That's going to overall be a lot safer than doing depot injection after depot injection, you know, where you, once it's in the cat, you can't remove it. It's just there. And I've seen more side effects with chronic depot injections than with oral steroids that are given on an alternate day basis. But even saying that, oral steroids, if you give them long enough, you may end up with a diabetic cat. You may end up with some cutaneous changes, especially the little ears. The cat's ears will fold with chronic steroids in some cases. So we watch for those. And I usually do some blood work monitoring, you know, usually twice yearly, at least, if I'm going to have them on chronic oral steroids.
Great. Excellent. Well, this has been a great overview, Dr. Griffin. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us, my friend.
I love the cats. Really fun. Another thing I want to mention too is, you know, having those conversations with your cat families about how or if they can give oral meds, because I think ultimately with atopy or allergic disease in cats, at some point we're going to have to give an anti-inflammatory and anti-itch medication by mouth. And I have some great relationships with some of my compounding pharmacies, because I might need a flavored liquid. And if they're not on a diet trial, they can flavor it with really anything the cat likes. Mm-hmm. So that's an option. And some of the companies come with little flavored chews, and you can order those without the medicine added and try a couple different ones for the cat, and then add your cyclosporin or your steroid in. And also with immunotherapy, we now have available sublingual immunotherapy. That's the allergy vaccine. I know sometimes that term confuses people, but immunotherapy is essentially where we allergy test the cat either through skin testing or serum testing. And then we identify what that cat's allergic to in the environment and then create a specific vaccine for them to hopefully desensitize them to what they're allergic to over time, which is by far my favorite way to treat and hopefully allows me to get them off of the chronic drugs. and maintain their allergies with just the immunotherapy. But I wanted to mention that immunotherapy can now be given as sublingual drops. That's been around for a while. And more recently, we started using transdermal immunotherapy. So you actually dose it up and you put the immunotherapy on the ears, and the cats tolerate that super well. So I'm excited for that for cats. We all are probably familiar with transdermal meds for cats, especially, I guess, methimazole was one of the ones that people kind of go to sometimes. And now you can use transdermal immunotherapy that way. And I have a cat that's like, it's so easy. And this cat is really mean. She's mean to the mom. She's mean to me. She just doesn't want to be messed with. And she tolerates transdermal immunotherapy really well. And she's done really well with it.
Do you think it's important for cat parents to protect the skin barrier? I'm not asking them to say bathe their pets, but do you think like supplements are important? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I do think barrier function restoration is really important. I mean, we know a lot in the dog. We don't know as much as we should in the canine patient as we do in humans, but we're learning more and more. And I think that's the next kind of look, is at cat skin and barrier function abnormalities in relation to atopic dermatitis. So I do have those conversations with my cat parents. I say, can you bathe or can you apply anything topically? And then we talk about options that we have, because there's mousses, sprays. Cats aren't super fond of sprays, but mousses and wipes that we can use if they can't bathe. But there are some cat families that can bathe, and that just adds moisture back to the skin, allows it to be more protective, and hopefully decreases the allergen penetration, the risk of secondary infection, and just overall controls their allergies a little bit better if we can add that into the routine, especially for cats that are prone to getting secondary infections. I'm going to add some sort of topical therapy in. The topical spot-ons that contain fatty acids, Dermacent, Atopavet, are two examples of that, and they have some nice products that are once weekly spot-ons that are very easy to use. So we've got those available. There's also a Atopavet collar. It smells like lavender, and that can be applied and help to add a barrier function for those cats. Fat cats that don't groom well, those Atopavet collars is pretty nice for those too.
Okay, excellent. Great stuff, my friend. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. Always good to hear from you.
Oh, I know. So fun. I loved it. Always chatting with you.
No, I know. Now, where can we learn more about you? Where can we learn more? Are you on Instagram, website?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram, Dr. Joya, the Pet Skin Vet, or on Facebook, LinkedIn, wherever you want to find me. Television, you can follow me there. A lot of resources, especially if you have students that you mentor. I'm sending them to Disney Plus or Nat Geo Wild to check out Paco's the Vet with Dr. Joy. A lot of fun information on there for people that are aspiring to be veterinarians or even dermatologists. So,
absolutely. I love it. Thank you so much again. And I'll see you soon. Okay.
Thanks.
Sounds good. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate the podcast for Dr. Joya. She's awesome. Hopefully you get a chance to see her, check her out live in her sessions. She's a great speaker, very engaging, and just a lot of fun. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll chat next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.